Good afternoon, everyone. This is a VHA Home Healthcare telephone town hall. Thank you all for joining us. My name is Tracy. I manage communications at VHA. We had some technical difficulties. My apologies for that, but we're glad to have you with us. Just to note before we get underway that we have the phone lines muted so that everyone will be able to hear and we won't have a lot of background noise. And we've received a number of questions in advance, so we'll do our best to answer as many of those as we can, and hopefully that will answer most of your questions. If there are any other questions that you have as we go along, feel free to email communications@vha.ca, and we'll attempt to answer those during the call or afterwards. And so without further ado, I will now turn it over to VHA's President and CEO, Carol Ennett, for some opening comments and to update us on the situation.
Thank you, Tracy, and thank you for everyone to take the time to join today's town hall and for the many very thoughtful questions submitted. I hope some of you are able to spend a few minutes outside in the sunshine on this beautiful day. My remarks will be brief to allow for plenty of time to answer all your questions directly. These are unprecedented times for all of us. It is complex, challenging, and filled with uncertainty. There are a myriad of sources of information available to all of us, as well as misinformation. And it is hard to tell fact from fiction when there is no clear playbook to guide us. The science and our knowledge of the virus is constantly evolving. And as a result, guidance and directives given to us are constantly changing in response to this new knowledge. As VHA receives information, whether it is suggested practices or specific directives from public health officials, the Ministry of Health, and/or our funders, we carefully review this information and implement it in a way that works best for our organization. I want to assure you we have a tremendous pandemic response team in place at VHA that was set up at the end of January and has been running this marathon ever since. This team is led by our Chief Nursing Executive, Catherine Nicol, who you will hear from shortly. This team has had oversight of everything related to the pandemic, from purchasing and distributing personal protective equipment, new policy development, virtual care to staffing issues, you name it, they're on it. This team is quick to respond when needed and takes appropriate action, and I have every confidence they are doing the best job possible. It's important to note that as a home care provider, we are part of a much bigger health system, and we need to be aware of and in step with the actions of our partners, be they hospitals, long-term care facilities, primary care, community support organizations, to name just a few. VHA is an active participant at many local, regional, and provincial planning tables, and we are very vocal in raising issues relevant to home care, and we are a strong and respected advocate for the needs of our clients, their families, our staff, and service providers. What happens in one part of the system no doubt impacts the other parts sooner or later. As you know, the early focus on this pandemic was acute care, specifically emptying hospital beds so they could be ready to accept the anticipated flood of COVID-19 patients who required acute and intensive care. The tragic hotspot is now long-term care and other congregate settings who have been hardest hit. And a number of wonderful VHA staff have responded to the cry for help, volunteering to go into homes across the GTA that are in an outbreak to provide full-time care that is so desperately needed. I have heard directly from clients and their families who are extremely worried about their own health and safety, that of their loved ones, and their VHA caregivers. I know a number of people have reluctantly chosen to put their service on hold, whether from out of fear and or on the advice of their physician, because there are no 100% guarantees at this time that they will be protected from the virus. Please know that we are doing absolutely everything possible to ensure the health and safety of everyone with the best information we have to guide us at any point in time. And we are committed to continuing to quickly respond and take the required action to implement changing public health recommendations as we get them. So I'm going to make a disclaimer before we get going. Our answers today are up to date as of today, and things can change, and we will keep you informed as they do. So I'm going to turn it back to Tracy, and we will keep moving on this call.
Thank you very much, Carol. Now let's introduce the other three leaders from VHA who are with us on the call today. We have Barbara Colley, Vice President of Client Services, which includes all of the teams of personal support workers, nurses, and rehab providers at VHA, all of whom report up to Barb. We have Kelly Myers, our Vice President of Human Resources, who is responsible for hiring, training, paying our staff, overseeing health and safety, and she helps manage any issues related to our staff. And Catherine Nickel, as Carol mentioned, is VHA's Chief Nursing Executive and overseeing all the areas of quality, infection prevention, and protective equipment during COVID-19 and always at VHA. And I'm going to turn it over to Catherine now, who's going to give a brief presentation about all we've been doing to help keep people safe.
Thanks, Tracy, and good afternoon, everybody. It is certainly a privilege to be the lead for VHA's Incident Command Team during this unprecedented time. I've been a nurse for over 30 years, spent a lot of time in acute care, worked during SARS, and now find myself in the home care sector, handling and dealing with a crisis that I never would have imagined. So it is certainly an unprecedented time, and I'm delighted to be here as part of this fabulous group to share with you what we're doing at VHA to do our best for our staff, our clients, and our families. So the Incident Command Team actually got started on the 24th of January, so it's been almost 4 months. It's not a race, it feels like a marathon. I feel like the end might be in sight, but I'm not very sure whether the light at the end of the tunnel is really just blurry eyes or truly a light. But I can reassure you that the Incident Command Team is an incredibly dedicated team that is closely monitoring not only our ability to continue to provide excellent service, but also is monitoring the impacts on our clients and families, so you, the impacts on our staff, our personal protective equipment, which really has turned out to be an incredible hotspot in all of this, so both supply and distribution, infection prevention and control, and of course, communications, not only inside the organization, but outside the organization as well. So, you know, many questions came in through to Tracy as part of this town hall, and many of those questions were related to IPAC, or infection prevention and control, and personal protective equipment. So we thought it might be helpful for me to give you a little bit of background on those two areas. And I'm going to finish up before starting the question period with a small amount of information on testing for COVID-19 as well as contact tracing. So let's start with infection prevention and control. We are really lucky in the province of Ontario to not only have Public Health Ontario, but also our Ministry of Health working closely to create current and evidence-based guidelines for infection prevention and control that are specific to all of the different sectors across the province. So for the home care sector, we have actually had four versions of home care guidelines that we have been able to have access to and to follow. Those versions were January 30th, February 11th, March 18th, and the most recent version came out on May 4th. So in my time as a nurse leader, you know, thinking that March 18th guidelines were out of date would have been unheard of, but certainly that's the sort of time that we're in right now. So the most recent guidance is May 4th, and that's the guidance that we are following to the T today. There's also additional guidance available on how to conserve personal protective equipment that we are also following closely. And I think that that is something that's important that all healthcare organizations follow, and we're actually held accountable for following, because as you would know through the media, the system and Ontario as a whole is experiencing limited supply of personal protective equipment. So we know that COVID-19 is a droplet and contact spread infection. So respiratory droplets spread infection when they enter our eyes, our nose, and our mouth. In addition, direct and indirect contact can spread infection when we touch a person or an object that has active virus on the surface. The key to limiting spread is really multifaceted: education, physical distancing, screening, militant hand hygiene, avoiding touching our face, source control, which you would know is universal use of masks by the public when physical distancing is not possible, self-monitoring for symptoms, and staying home from work when you're sick are all critical components of limiting spread. Personal protective equipment really should be seen as a last line of defense after all of those have been implemented. So let's move on then to PPE, or personal protective equipment, because again, it is a hot spot. So personal protective equipment for infections that are spread via the contact and droplet route involve the use of gloves, a gown, a mask, and eye protection or a face shield. The mask and the eye protection or the face shield provides protection against those droplets that spread in the air. And it also provides some protection from being a barrier to our touching our eyes, our nose, and our mouth. Gown and gloves provide protection against contact spread, but really the most effective way to prevent contact spread of infection is hand hygiene and avoiding touching our face. Usually we use personal protective equipment when we know the infection is present. But with COVID, we are also implementing universal use of personal protective equipment. This is when we use certain kinds of PPE with all close client care, whether we know the infection is there or not. And we are doing this out of an abundance of caution, because there have been limited cases of infection spread when no symptoms are present or when symptoms are not recognized. So at VHA, we implemented universal masking. So that's mask used by our staff and service providers for all close client care on March the 24th. This was mandated about 5.5 weeks later by Public Health Guidance and Ministry Guidance. More recently, so last Monday, we also implemented universal face shield use, where staff can choose to wear a face shield during all episodes of close client care. This is not mandated yet by the ministry, but it'll be interesting to see what future guidance holds for us. Also, we know that glove use is part of universal precautions that have been in place since the 1980s, when the spread of HIV was a concern. So I'm just gonna finish up by talking very briefly about testing and contact tracing. There were lots of questions from you about testing, and believe me, we have lots of questions about testing as well. The Ministry of Health is the body that sets the priority groups for testing and the testing criteria, and public health oversees the testing activity. VHA does not have control over whether our staff are eligible for testing or not. Currently, Ministry of Health guidance says that testing of asymptomatic persons, including healthcare workers, is not recommended unless part of outbreak management or a formal surveillance initiative of asymptomatic persons. And the only formal surveillance initiative that is currently underway is testing of staff and residents of long-term care and retirement homes and emergency child care centers. As Carol mentioned, those are the groups that are in the most distress and are needing the most attention, and they are the ones that are top priority for testing at the moment. Please be reassured that we are advocating strongly for formal surveillance for all healthcare workers, including home care workers. And we really hope that the public health and the ministry are able to expand that testing as soon as possible. So just to sum up, I also wanted to let you know that contact tracing is the responsibility of public health, but we play an important role in supporting them with this. We have an obligation to notify public health when we hear about a positive case, whether it be one of our staff who chooses to let us know, or whether we find out one of our clients has tested positive or has a positive diagnosis. We also notify the LHIN if the referral came through that route. And we do play an active role in helping with contact identification, determining level of risk and of exposure, and notifications as directed by the LHIN or by public health. And as their capacity increases or decreases, our role may increase or decrease to assist them to be timely and efficient at contact tracing. So I'm going to turn it back over to Tracy. I know we have a whole raft of questions, which we're all looking forward to answering. So back to you, Tracy, to lead us away.
Thank you very much, Catherine. And I'm going to direct our first question to Barbara Colley in Client Services. Barbara, is there a risk that in-home care hours will be reduced if the pandemic continues for much longer?
Thank you, Tracy. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, yes, this pandemic has certainly played havoc with healthcare. Let me answer that question this way. The care we provide is very individual, and part of pandemic planning by the LHINs and by VHA is to constantly reassess each client to assess the level of risk and the care that's needed. Now, this is because, as a result of COVID-19, we do expect and have seen that from time to time, we may not be able to provide the full number of visits that we have been approved for, or what we might have to do is provide a shorter visit with a focus on urgent personal care. This is true, and especially in our personal support services. What I can say is that together with the LHIN, we constantly evaluate each client situation. We assess for risk and client strengths and abilities. And we assess family availability to support the care plan and work with us as part of the care circle. Each situation is unique, so if there are any service adjustments, we will work with our clients and with their family caregivers to ensure they receive the care they need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Catherine, personal protective equipment question. Can you confirm what type of personal protective equipment PSWs and other care providers are allowed to use, and what is the protocol for disposing of it once it's used?
Right, thanks, Tracy. So there's really two scenarios here for personal protective equipment. The one scenario is if there is a positive screen, and I'm going to describe what that means. And the other scenario is if there's a negative screen or it's just regular care. So a positive screen is based on the most recent screening tool, again, that's provided by either public health or the Ministry of Health. And so currently there are four scenarios that would result in a positive screen. So the client could be symptomatic, and that means that they have one or more of the typical or atypical symptoms that are listed in the screening guidance by Public Health and the Ministry of Health. The second is if a client or someone in the household is waiting for a test result. The third is if the client or someone in the household actually has a positive diagnosis of COVID-19. And the fourth is if the client or someone in the household had close contact with anyone with acute respiratory illness or traveled outside of Canada in the last 14 days. So this would constitute a positive screen. And we would require the staff or service provider to use full personal protective equipment against contact and droplet spread infection, which again is gloves, gown, eye protection or face shield, and a mask. Disposal would be in regular garbage at the end of the visit. If there's a negative screen and it's just regular care, it's mandatory use of a mask, gloves, of course, if there is a risk of exposure to blood and body fluids, and the option to wear a face shield. Gloves should be disposed of in the regular garbage immediately after the visit. Reuse and extended use of the mask and the face shield are accepted as long as we follow public health guidance on that.
Thank you. Also for you, Catherine, what precautions are being taken to ensure workers who visit multiple clients in a day are protected themselves and are not transmitting the virus to clients?
Sure. So certainly we make sure that all of our staff and service providers have a weekly supply of personal protective equipment, ongoing education, that they're self-monitoring for symptoms, screening their clients, wear their full PPE for positive screens or COVID positive with disposal after single use, and then of course universal mask and face shield use for a negative screen or regular care as I just described. And again, following safe extended use and reuse guidance from the Ministry or Public Health Ontario. So with all of that together, would sort of outline the precautions that are taken over multiple visits in a day.
Great. And can you remind us again, why were our workers not wearing face shields until recently when providing regular care?
Sure. So just for clarity, eye protection, which can include goggles or a face shield, were always being worn when there was a positive screen. So, but only recently there's been enough evidence of infection transmission from individuals who are asymptomatic and or those who have subclinical symptoms that may not be noticed that have led to leading practices being implemented by some hospitals for universal use of face shields. So as with universal masking in late March, it starts with the hospitals and then moves to other health organizations, and our goal is to try and adopt that as quickly as possible, which we did last week with the use of universal face shields. So it'll be interesting to see if this results in ministry guidance later on that makes it mandatory across the sector. That's the reason.
Thank you. Kelly from Human Resources, I'm going to direct to you. What is VHA doing in terms of a personal support worker retention strategy, given the turnover amongst PSWs before COVID-19 and especially now?
Thanks, Tracy. excuse me. We have a great PSW workforce, and at VHA, that's about 1,700 staff. We're very proud and privileged to work with them, and recruiting and retaining the very best staff is always our top priority. We know from our workforce that having a great connection to their supervisor and truly feeling supported while they're working in the community is the most important thing that we can do. As a senior team, we're working hard to ensure that all of our supervisors have the information that they need to answer the very many questions that staff have. We're encouraging supervisors to stay in really close touch with their teams, to hold team huddles and calls, have one-on-one phone conversations, and where necessary, to meet up in person when that's needed the most. Our COVID incident command team has been providing weekly updates on the issues that we know are most pressing for staff. PPE, as Catherine's been talking about, lost hours and income reduction, mental health and remaining resilient, celebrating our successes and remaining positive in every way that we can. Childcare concerns and support for essential workers, and navigating the various government programs that are now available. We've created something that's called a COVID hub with resources for our staff, and they can access these anytime. As an employer, we're working hard to remain as flexible as we can be for our staff who are currently unable to work due to childcare or their own family care issues. And we've been trying to work individually with each staff member to find solutions that allow them to return to work as soon as possible. Where we can, we've provided financial incentives over and above the supports that the government is providing. And we also have an emergency relief fund for those staff who really are in dire straits and need our financial help. Last but not least, we've made a pledge and a promise to our workforce that we would never, ever ask anyone to work without PPE. and we've been very clear on that. We remain transparent, answer as many questions as we can, and do everything we can to support our workforce.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Catherine, confirm again why our staff are not wearing gown as well as feet coverings and caps on their heads for all visits?
Sure, thanks, Tracy. So the use of universal gown, foot covering, and caps is not recommended by public health or the ministry in any of their guidance documents. And the bottom line is, you know, these are all mechanisms of spread of infection through contact. And we know that the absolute best way to prevent contact spread of infection is frequent and proper hand hygiene and always refraining from touching our eyes, nose, and mouth. So really, you know, if we were going to focus on something that would prevent contact spread, it should be hand hygiene and not touching your face. That's where I'd put my bet.
Thank you very much. Barbara, I'm going to ask if you can start with answering this question. It's my understanding that your staff are not to work if they are sick. Is that true? And if so, how is that being enforced?
Thank you, Tracy. Yes, staff should not be working if they are sick. You know, staff, when they're hired here, are provided an orientation and a set of clinical policies that include the importance of self-monitoring their own health before heading out to see clients. And then, what to do if they are sick. We have a process that allows staff to call in, report when they are ill, and that sets our coordination staff ready to find a replacement for that ill staff member. In terms of reinforcing this, we emphasize health and safety with a variety of campaigns throughout the year, and especially during flu season. And thanks to our active health and safety committee, staff have a place to go to ask questions and receive ongoing information. Supervisors reinforce the importance of keeping clients safe and support our staff and providers. If we were to find out that a staff member was ill but continued to see their clients, this would be considered a performance issue and the staff supervisor would become involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barbara. Catherine, so if our staff provides care to someone who is sick, do they continue to work or do they stay home? And how can we assure other clients don't get sick if our workers are providing care to people who are sick?
Okay, yeah, thanks. So I think this goes back to something that Carol said in her introductory remarks. And that is the importance, you know, the important role that home care plays in this fight against COVID, not only by ensuring that our hospitals and emergency departments aren't overcrowded by those who don't need to be there, but also because home is where most people want to recover and often have the best outcomes. So it's absolutely critical that we continue to provide great home care, not only for those who have always received it, but also those who are recovering from COVID. Our staff screen clients, they're trained in infection prevention and control, and they have the right personal protective equipment. Interestingly, the crisis has highlighted the risks and vulnerabilities of congregate care arrangements like long-term care homes, retirement homes, shelters, and jails and group homes, which in turn has actually emphasized that home care is one of the safest settings for care to be provided. So I think with the right policies and protocols in place and the right use of PPE, home care can be a safe place to receive care today.
Thank you. Are our PSWs and other care providers being tested for COVID-19? If not, why not? Catherine, could you speak to that?
Yes, and I covered this one off in my opening remarks a little bit, but you know, right now the Ministry of Health is the group that establishes those who are priority for testing and the criteria for being tested that are being implemented in our assessment centers and in our hospitals and of course by our primary care providers. So right now testing of any asymptomatic person is not recommended unless part of a formal outbreak management like what we would see in a long-term care home is who's in outbreak and they would do widespread testing of all staff and all residents. We know that there is a formal surveillance initiative going on in the province of Ontario right now, where they've just actually finished testing all staff and all residents in all long-term care homes because of the crisis that has hit there. So that is the priority right now. Our hope is that the testing can be extended to all healthcare workers, hospital workers, community workers, and home care workers, and that we will be included in that sweep. And we are strongly advocating that whenever and wherever we can. I think that it is important also to note that testing is a point in care result. So if I were tested today, I would know today whether I was positive or negative. But as I lived my life and went about my business tomorrow, the next day, et cetera, that testing result would no longer be relevant. So, you know, there are benefits to testing, but it's not the end all be all for assurance of safety ongoing. I'll just stop there.
Great, thank you. So with that said, Kelly, can you tell us how many of VHA staff members, including PSWs, have tested positive for COVID-19?
Okay, so the total workforce at VHA numbers approximately 3,000. And to date, we have had a total of 19 reported cases among our entire workforce. Our COVID incident command team receives a report each Tuesday and Thursday. And this information is provided by our healthy workplace team, who's responsible for tracking and following up on all COVID-related absences. It's important to note that staff are under no obligation to disclose their health status to their employer, but all COVID positive test results are provided through public health.
Thank you. So do we know how many VHA staff members have been connected to a client who has tested positive?
Determining the source of a COVID positive result is really a challenge. And it's extremely difficult to link a causal relationship between a staff and a client. But to the best of our knowledge, based on the conversations that we've had with staff and with clients, four cases would appear to be VHA work-related, and 15 cases are as a result of community spread through a family member or friend, or possibly from other employment. Again, we share these results with our staff on a weekly basis. Right now, we're very relieved to say that 8 staff are fully recovered and the remaining 11 staff are recovering at home. Once a staff member has tested positive, they are required to complete a 14-day isolation period, remain symptom-free, and have one negative test result before returning to work.
Thank you very much. So, Catherine, how can we ensure that our workers do not have COVID-19 if they are not being tested? And how are we protecting clients given this situation?
Right. So, you know, the bottom line is that we don't know that all of our workers are free from COVID-19. No employer can be sure that all of their workers are free from COVID infection. And even those who are part of a formal surveillance initiative only have that knowledge, as I mentioned previously, about a single point in time. So, you know, with that in mind, it's really important to have, again, multiple strategies in place to not only protect our clients, but also to protect our staff. You know, we need to ensure that all staff self-monitor for symptoms and know the symptoms to watch for. They don't work when they're sick, as we've talked about a few times. That screening happens with all clients at all visits. That staff report all positive screening results to their supervisors for follow-up, which includes notification of the LIN, as well as guidance to contact telehealth or their primary care provider if they're symptomatic or ill. That they wear full PPE for positive screens, and that we use the universal mask during all episodes of close care, and if we choose to also wear a face shield for all episodes of close care. And it's also really important to ensure our staff have access to adequate PPE and regular information and education. And I'm probably missing a few as well, but I'm sure that they showed up in other questions that we had this afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Carol, can you tell us what we are doing to advocate for our staff to get testing?
Well, as Catherine mentioned already, we are advocating loud and clear at many tables on issues that impact home care clients and staff, and testing is definitely one of them. And as she mentioned, healthcare workers do have priority for testing if they have symptoms, but not if they're asymptomatic. And most recently, we have requested a directive from public health regarding the need for an accelerated, continuous testing implementation plan for all healthcare workers, including home care workers, regardless of whether they are symptomatic or not. And we will keep advocating on behalf of our clients and our staff.
Thank you. Kelly, our staff who are working with COVID positive clients are also working with other clients?
Thanks, Tracy. Yes, that is possible, not unlike any other healthcare environment. Currently at VHA, we're working with a very small number of COVID positive clients, and we're providing compassionate and competent care as our clients recover at home. It's our responsibility not only to our hospital partners who are working hard to manage capacity, but we also know that home is where people want to recover and where they often do better. As Catherine has mentioned, our staff are completing telephone screenings and face-to-face screenings with clients. They're working with their supervisors and with the LHINs and clients to determine if the service is essential. In many cases, services have been placed on hold if a client is COVID positive. However, if the service is essential and needs to continue, all staff providing care are advised that the client is COVID positive in advance of the visit, and we ensure that they have adequate PPE to provide care. Our staff have all been trained in proper donning and doffing of PPE, putting it on, taking it off, ensuring that the PPE is then disposed of properly as well. Our PPE distribution team has also created specific PPE kits for COVID positive clients, so there's no confusion at all about what gear should be worn for a COVID positive case.
Thank you very much. Barbara, in this situation, a father was discharged from hospital 2 weeks ago after a hip surgery and is meant to receive some physiotherapy care at home. Would the time frame for this be extended due to COVID-19? And if not, how can physiotherapy happen with limited face-to-face interaction?
Thank you, Tracy. We receive our referrals after they have been processed by the LHINs. Fortunately, most of our physiotherapists have continued to provide treatment to clients for whom active physiotherapy is required. So for some clients, they return home from hospital with instructions to maintain the gains they've made in hospital, and they feel able to progress their own recovery. In that case, those clients would defer their care for a period of time and work away on their own. If for those clients who do require input from a physiotherapist, and if they are comfortable with our regular face-to-face in-home visit pattern, the therapy can be provided in the usual way. Our therapists have the personal protective equipment they need and can do the home visit. Now, for those clients who would prefer not to have us visit their home, much therapy can be provided virtually, and our therapists would work using technology and would work with the client and family to actually provide a virtual visit until a face-to-face visit is acceptable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Catherine, how do I know it is safe to have PSWs in my home, family, and also visiting other clients? And what if a PSW has allergies?
Yeah, so, you know, I think really there is no guarantee of safety. I think that all we can do is just take all the precautions that are possible to make things as safe as possible. So again, you know, just to break down some of the different steps that we've taken, you know, before arriving at the door, we've got our staff self-monitoring and not working when they're sick. You know, there's the education and training. When they arrive at the door, you know, they're hopefully, you know, doing their screening again. If they've already done it over the phone, they can do it again at the door. They're carrying their PPE with them. They've got their phone to contact their supervisor. And then during care, you know, it's the hand hygiene, physical distancing where possible, where it's not possible, proper use of PPE and proper disposal of PPE. So if a PSW has allergies, I think that the, you know, the guidance really is to look for those kinds of symptoms that that stand outside the allergy. So if you typically have X, Y, and Z and you're exhibiting X, Y, and Z, the medical guidance is that, you know, you can don a mask and it would be allergies. If it's anything outside of what you regularly experience, then you need to treat that as if it's atypical symptoms for you and notify your supervisor and not work. So,
okay, thank you. Carol, if I put my services on hold due to COVID-19, is it safe to have my worker come back? And if I do decide to put my service on hold, could I have the same worker back again?
Yeah. I appreciate this question because I think many clients and families are thinking about this or have done it already. And the decision about putting your service on hold or restarting service is an individual one that each person has to make on their own. And as Catherine's explained, we are following best practices in infection control. Staff are instructed on the use and the proper protocols to keep you and themselves as safe as possible. But I get it if you choose not to have someone in your home because there are no guarantees. I do worry, however, that some folks at home without care may be putting their own health at risk or the caregiver's health at risk. And I would hate to see them land in hospital and where no one wants to be at this time. And I think Catherine mentioned it earlier, home care is one of the safest settings for the provision of health care at this time. So to the question of, do I get my worker back? Please know, unfortunately, we cannot make any promises that you would get the same worker or the same schedule, service at the same days or same time. And we really understand that clients and families make absolutely great connections and relationships with their workers. And it's not easy to rebuild that, nor is it easy to orientate anybody new coming to provide care. So we would do our best to reconnect, but absolutely given the complexity of travel, timing of visits, caseloads, we cannot make any promises. And we also anticipate a portion of our workforce will not be returning for some time because they have childcare issues and cannot work. And that too forces us to rebalance caseloads in the best possible way with the staff that we have. So again, I really respect individual decisions on this and know that whatever you decide, we will provide the care or wait to provide support for you.
Thank you. Catherine, if we're seeing clients who have recently been discharged from hospital, should we not be treating them all as though they might be COVID positive?
So currently there is a lack of guidance on this for home care. Certainly for long-term care transfers from hospital, residents have to undergo a 14-day isolation when they get back to the long-term care home. And again, that's due to the crisis that we're experiencing in our long-term care homes. What we do know, though, is many hospitals are conducting testing due to symptoms being so wide-ranging. So we can access these results, which is helpful where they exist. Also, there's two layers of screening usually that happen. So the one layer of screening comes through the LIN when they do their referral of the client from the hospital to the home. And then, of course, we do our layer of screening when we are doing the phone ahead of the visit or, again, at the door when we arrive at the client. And again, another protective activity is universal masking for all clients, the option of universal face shield, and of course, universal glove use, regardless of screening result. So until we have more solid guidance on that, it's just our regular approach to client care for those clients.
Thank you. Kelly, have any COVID positive cases been linked to PSWs who were providing service to home care clients?
To the best of our knowledge, no clients have contracted COVID following care from a VHA staff. However, as I mentioned earlier, it would appear that four VHA staff have contracted COVID-19 following exposure to clients who have tested positive.
Thank you. And Barbara, in our clinics, how are we ensuring consistent hygiene, such as client chairs being wiped down and so on? How do we make sure this happens?
Thanks, Tracy. Yes, that is most important, and we have three clinics, and I want to reassure everyone that we follow the same public health guidelines for client and staff safety do the following. First of all, staff pre-screen before arrival. Universal masking and face shields are in place. We do environmental cleaning after each client. What that involves is wiping down surfaces, new paper on treatment beds, supplies are discarded after each use. We do overall environmental cleaning as well every hour in the waiting room for all our surfaces touched by client, staff, and visitors. We ensure that we only have two people in the waiting room at a time, and our chairs are measured 2 meters or 6 feet apart. We screen each client the day before for any symptoms, and we screen clients and visitors again before entering the clinic with temperature checks as well as screening for symptoms. Every 24 hours, there is a full environmental cleanup of every surface and treatment area, including walls, floors, doorknobs, windowsills, etc. And we document the screening of every client we see. Safety audits are in place, and I think you can see we take the sanitizing of our clinics very seriously.
Thank you very much. Barbara, I'm going to ask if you can address this question as well. What are you doing to make sure staff do screen clients before every visit in the home and that they're using the proper protective equipment with every client?
Mm-hmm. So thank you, Tracy. I certainly can understand that question and appreciate it. And once again, the reality is with a home setting, no one is there overseeing the provider or staff and what they're doing. However, supervisors, clinical leads, and personal support coaches do joint visits with our staff. And during annual performance review, supervisors and others are in the home, and that's where typical behavior would be observed. What I can tell you is that our staff want to remain safe and they want to keep working, so they are highly motivated to screen properly and protect themselves by wearing the appropriate personal protective equipment that our team provides them every week. Our job is to ensure that they have both the equipment and the knowledge they need to do the right thing. Should staff not be screening or wearing their personal protective equipment according to our guidelines, according to our clinical policies, this we would consider a performance issue, and as I've mentioned before, our supervisor would become involved.
Thank you very much, Barbara. We've reached just about 5 o'clock, so I am. We're going to end the questions there, and hopefully we've managed to answer most of your questions. Again, apologies for the technical difficulties some of you would have experienced at the beginning of the call, but I'm glad so many of you were able to join us, and we do hope this was helpful. If you have further questions that were not addressed, please feel free to email them to communications@vha.ca, and we will also be putting frequently asked questions based on many of the questions posed here onto our website in the coming days. So thank you from me for your patience with the technical difficulties and for joining us this afternoon. And I'll just turn it over to Carol Annett for some closing comments.
So I'll just echo Tracy's thank you, both for joining the call, for putting up with our delayed start, and your excellent questions. And I also want to thank you for your concern about our staff and service providers. You care deeply about your own health, your loved one, your family, but I know all of you have respect for our workers. They are such caring, committed, competent people, and they are working very hard at this stressful time to keep you as safe, as healthy as possible. And it makes a big difference to them to know that you are appreciative of their efforts. So I thank you for that. And I think it's pretty tough on all of us at this time. And I think all we can do is be good to each other, whether you are giving or receiving care. So as for that, I'm going to say keep well, as well as you can. And as I say, keep your questions coming. We're learning. Things will change. And as they change, we will change with them too. And thank you for allowing us the privilege to serve you and or your loved one.
Thank you very much, Carol. Thanks again to everyone on the line. And have a good afternoon and take care. Bye-bye.